they're holding the nuclear power plant for many months now, but apparently they can stop, they can try to launch a false flag attack on the nuclear power plant. The good thing is that the walls of the nuclear power plant are pretty thick, so they should withhold a pretty big missile attack. That's what we hope for. But it still feels very unsafe, truth be told. It still feels very dangerous. We have learned to read the maps of the winds to understand where the wind would blow in case something's happened over there on the south, which is a scary thing to be living with. It's like checking on the winds around that area to understand who will be most threatened. But we hope that they wouldn't act upon it, that they would just keep on use it as basically a hostage, well, if you can say it this way. But yeah, this is one of the most difficult situation right now, is over the nuclear power plant.
And now, the Dave Kinchin Show.
Hi there, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We are back with Inna Sufsin, a member of Ukraine's parliament. She gives us an update on the governmental affairs going on in her country now that Russia's war in Ukraine has entered 6 months. Inna Sufsin, thank you so much for taking the time to check in with us. I know we just hit the six-month mark of this war, this continued aggression, and of course, Independence Day. I wonder first, how are things for you on this Independence Day? Obviously, I'm sure very emotional, fair to say.
Yeah, indeed. It was a very different Independence Day compared to the 30 that we had before. And for several reasons. Well, first of all, of course, we didn't have any big celebrations. So unlike last year, when we went to a big parade in Kyiv city center with all the, you know, with everybody present there, it was huge, lots of people and so on and so forth. This year, we didn't have any big public celebrations. It was actually not allowed to gather in big groups because of the increased risk of the Russian attack. But despite there being no big celebrations in the public, I think the way people felt about this day was much more important. And people felt the value of this day so much more this year compared to last year. And I think that is most important. It's not when people celebrate publicly, but when people still feel the need to celebrate their homes with their families, I don't know, by writing on Facebook, whatever. So I think that in that sense, this year it was very different. And I would say that it was even a bigger celebration despite not being very public.
I was hearing someone on television here in America say, you know, 6 months ago, you know, Russia began this quest to no longer allow Ukraine to be an independent country. It still is in this case. You're fighting for your lives, obviously. But the fact that Ukraine at this point is still independent, given the strongest fight you've probably seen, or that many there have seen. I know there have been other wars, obviously, but does that strike you in any way?
Well, both yes and no. I mean, if you think back to, I don't know, early March, yep. I think at that time that the, you know, understanding how the future would look like was very unclear. But then when we are looking back in the last, I don't know, hundreds of years, it seems pretty obvious that Ukrainian nation has always been willing to put up a fight, you know, to get ready to fight against those, what they call themselves brothers, who are now killing Ukrainians every single day. So I think that historically that there is an explanation and it was to be expected. But still, the very fact that we managed to stand against this second biggest army in the world is still amazing, because I don't think that there is any single country in the world, except for the United States, that would be able to hold against Russia. And I think the very fact that we are still standing and the Russians are not moving forward is a big, you know, a big big story in itself. There are lots of jokes over here in Ukraine. They're saying that, well, if Russia claims that they are the second biggest army in the world, if they're the second strongest army in the world, and we managed to stop them, then what does that make Ukrainian army? I mean, of course, we don't pretend to be the strongest army in the world, but I think we're doing pretty good, both as the army and then as the society altogether.
It's interesting because, you know, I remember at some point during the war, there was this interesting development where it seems surprising to us in the U.S., like in Kyiv and other places where businesses started opening again. And I know like the gas stations were running. I mean, you have to try to, and you were saying you have to try to bring the economy back around somehow. But as this has gone on now to 6 months, I mean, how is the economy doing? How are things shutting down again? Or where is the sort of business and social climate now?
Well, I'll tell you this, economic situation is getting pretty bad right now. We do have a very big inflation, 20-25% on food, for instance. I'll tell you the truth. I, being a middle class, according to Ukrainian standards, I'm now thinking twice about what I buy in the supermarket in terms of food, because and that's something that I haven't felt like for the last quite good number of years. I could afford food whichever I wanted in the supermarket. I mean, I don't go to fancy restaurants or anything, but at least in terms of buying food in the supermarket, that's something new that I'm dealing with right now. And then I would say the bigger problem is, of course, people losing their jobs. And that is indeed becoming a big problem. And I also have some personal friends of mine who are entrepreneurs, and they unfortunately have to let people go. And that is, of course, a big tragedy for everybody. So, yeah, people are starting to open up businesses. But, I mean, in some spheres of business, it's still, yeah, people have to shut down. I don't know, clothing and design and all of that stuff, something that people do not deem as the most important thing during the war. That is where we are still losing employment. And I know many people who have stayed in Ukraine in the first half a year, but now they're thinking that maybe they would go to some European country to earn some money because they just cannot afford living without any income over here in Ukraine. Mm. So this is getting very, very difficult, truth be told. Mm.
What's happening if we're in Parliament? I mean, where are you now in terms of policies? And can you give us a rundown of some of the things that'll be upcoming?
Now, there is a big debate about what to do with economics, and there are some ideas that are just appearing, like we should cut down taxes, or we should decrease taxes, or we should increase taxes. So I'll tell you this, I cannot be sure about where this debate will lead us to, because I think we are at the very early stages of this debate. But there is some attempt to think more strategically about economics and about how to change the taxation system so that we address the problems with economics better. But there is no solution. And there are people who are arguing we need to increase taxes, and then there are people who are arguing we need to decrease taxes. And I don't think that there is a right solution to that. There is lots of debate about that right now. What is most interesting is that there are conflicting ideas coming up from the same party, from the majority party that is running the country, which is make it even more confusing. So we don't know where this will end up at the end. So we are just following this debate and trying to reason and to find arguments to make at least as reasonable policy in terms of economics as possible. Then there are also things which are being debated, because according to Ukrainian constitution, men have obligation to serve in the army. Before the big war, only about 10% of people were drafters. Everybody else they signed up, they volunteered for the army before. But of course, right now there are lots of people who are conscripts, so they have been drafted to the army. And because of this, it was not allowed for men to leave the country, which also is becoming an economic problem on itself. So there are debates whether we should allow for men to leave the country. And it seems to be that there is now a solution that we would allow some men to leave the country to go on business trips or students to go study or anything else like that. So that is also some of the things that are being discussed by the parliament and the government right now.
That's interesting. Is there, how is the, from a staffing level, how's the military doing? I know resources you can always use more resources. And I know that the USA is sending over about $3 billion worth of like military aid. I think Germany's going to send some reinforcements over too, at least in terms of equipment and such. But how are things on that front?
Well, we are receiving some financial help, but it's, it's not enough, and B, it's not everything that has been promised. So with the recent package of help from the US, it's already in the, in the state budget. So that's great. That was very quick, and we actually got the money. But if you look, there is lots of data online that shows like the money that were being committed and the money that was actually delivered to Ukraine. And I think there is like a 40% gap between that, which is quite significant. So there are some promises which are being made but are not acted upon later. And again, we hate being in this position where we just have to run around and to beg for money, but we don't really have a choice because that's the only way we can keep on protecting both ourselves, but then also the European Union, truth be told. But yeah, unfortunately, it takes time and effort on our side, on the side of the government, to make sure that we're actually receiving all the help that has been promised. And still the major thing we need is military aid. And that is the biggest thing. And that is what we keep, no other help, all other types of help make no difference if we are not getting enough military aid to protect ourselves. And in that sense, yes, we are getting more and more military aid, but there are some things which we do not understand in terms of military aid. For instance, this apparently decision by the Western governments not to provide tanks and armored vehicles to the Ukrainian army. It seems to be a coordinated policy. I think even Macron mentioned that openly. And then we also can see what aid is being sent, and tanks are not being sent. And then when I talk, I'm not a military person myself, but when I talk to the military, they all say the same, like show us a single general who can explain how to go on counteroffensive without any tank. And that makes sense to me, right? Even without any military background. But it seems to be that there still runs this argument that we don't want to escalate. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And I really wish that changes as soon as possible. We need tanks. We need everything else as well. But tanks, I don't understand this fixation on tanks. And why not give those to Ukraine? But not a single country is giving those to Ukraine. And we really, really need those.
I was going to ask you just about the frustration of not having, 6 months into this, not having the international community step up the way you'd like it to step up. I mean, is it a bit mind-boggling to you that, 6 months in, there's still all of these needs that any country of your size and situation would need, given, what you're going through, and that so much still hasn't been delivered? Is it still just kind of shocking that 6 months in, you're still, the Ukrainian government has to ask the West for, more help?
Well, I'm trying not to be irritated because that doesn't solve the problem. I'm trying to focus on the reasons why, because when we understand the reasons, we can, argue against those and offer our arguments why tanks should be provided to the Ukrainian army. So it is frustrating. And trust me, I wake up every morning and I have to text my boyfriend to check if he's alive. Just imagine doing that for 6 months, every day, every single day in a row, just being worried constantly about his well-being, about whether he's alive or dead. I think that is something that anyone listening to this, just try to imagine doing that yourself, and you will understand how emotionally difficult that is. And of course, in that sense, yeah, it's very difficult for me to understand why other powers are not helping us more to stop all this terrible, terrible things from happening. But I'm just trying to understand what the real reasons behind that are and try to find arguments against that. So I don't understand the argument of we don't want to escalate, because what does it mean not to escalate? Yesterday on our Independence Day, the Russians fired a missile into a train station in the Dnipropetrovsk region, which already killed 22 people, including two children. What did those children do wrong to deserve this? what other, like if that is not escalation, then what would be escalation? That right now, some people claiming that over 60,000 people were killed in Mariupol alone. Of course, we cannot confirm nor deny this number, but this is the approximate, you know, calculation based on the number of you know, people claiming that their relatives have disappeared and so on and so forth. 60,000 people, just think about that. And add to that also for 8 years of war before February 24th, we have lost 14,000 people. 14,000 people. So the longer this drags on, the more victims we shall have. So I don't understand the let's not escalate argument, because I think that this policy has failed on February 24th and should be given up. And I'm just trying to find the right ways to explain that to whoever is willing to listen.
Yeah, no, I understand. I had a rare surprise opportunity yesterday to sit down with the U.S. Army's chief of staff. And he was saying that, you know, there's the continuation of training for Ukrainian forces. But he says, of course, he's unaware of any plans for there to be boots on the ground in Ukraine. But a lot of people are wondering the same thing. Like you said, as this goes on in the escalation, I mean, you know, is it not inevitable that people have said, is it not inevitable that there has to be some commitment of ground troops from other countries to assist?
Well, I'll tell you this. We are not even discussing that. That seems pretty unrealistic right now. So we are not even opening up this discussion. We would be pretty happy if we get the tanks and the armored vehicles and the 150 kilometers missile launchers and all of that. At least that. I mean, again, because I think there are lots of politicians who might be scaring, like, we don't want to get involved, particularly in the US. You have your own history of involvement, which can be problematic for some people. So trust me, we are not calling for troops on the ground, even though we highly appreciate all the foreigners who did come as volunteers to come to fight in the Ukrainian army. We do have those people. I've talked to some of them. That's great that we have them, but we are not asking the US to send your army personnel to fight in Ukraine. Again, would be highly appreciated, but you know, I believe it's not happening. But why not give us tanks? That is something I cannot understand.
Yeah. How's your boyfriend? When's the last time you saw your boyfriend?
Well, I actually did see him, was it 3 weeks ago? He came for a couple of days to Kyiv, which was the longest he stayed in Kyiv. And then he's on the mission right now, and I don't know where. But he's all right. He's waiting for those tanks to come, and for the ambulance. He's a military medic, so he really needs an ambulance, with highly specialized ambulance that I'm still trying to fundraise for. So there are still lots of needs that are being not met by the military on the ground, and we are trying as much as possible to meet those needs. Yeah, it's fine. The only thing he's saying is that it's going to drag for a while now. And we have to be realistic about, you know, about this. But that's a very difficult thought to hold. It's like someone just took away half of a year of my life, of my plans with him, with my son and everything, just because someone decided to attack. So that is difficult to accept on itself. But then if thinking that it can drag on for, I don't know, a year more, that's a year of my life, of his life, of our children's lives, that we're not getting back.
And on top of this, and I'm reading now, of course, it's been in the news, the UN Security Council meeting to focus on the threat of the nuclear facility situation. I mean, this is, you know, you talk about a crazy situation getting even crazier. What's going through your mind?
Well, with this Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, the Russians are as cynical as it gets, because they have occupied the nuclear power plant and now they're claiming that Ukrainians are creating a nuclear threat to the world. This is, I don't know, how would anyone listen to that? But I think that is unacceptable. So the situation is like this. They're holding the nuclear power plant for many months now. But apparently they can try to launch a false flag attack on the nuclear power plant. The good thing is that the walls of the nuclear power plant are pretty thick, so they should withhold a pretty big missile attack. That's what we hope for. But it still feels very unsafe truth be told, it still feels very dangerous. We have learned to read the maps of the winds, to understand where the wind would blow in case something's happened over there on the south, which is a scary thing to be living with. It's like checking on the winds around that area to understand who will be most threatened. But we hope that they wouldn't act upon it, that they would just keep on use it as basically a hostage. Well, if you can say it this way. But yeah, this is one of the most difficult situation right now, is over the nuclear power plant.
I can only imagine, yeah, just watching that, how terrifying that is. Is there anything else you'd like to add at all? I really appreciate you taking the time.
No, just next time you see the U.S. Chief of Staff, do tell him about the tanks. That would be the biggest thing.
Like, you got it, yep.
Yeah, that would be most important.
All right. Thank you, Inna Simpson. Thank you so much for your time. Truly appreciate you.
Sure.